You must be awfully rich to have this place all to yourself, she said. His lips edged into a thin smile. It's not mine, really. It's not. Legally, this building is a research center. It's owned by the Humphreys Trust and operated jointly by a consortium of Merced universities and the Cellini Executive Board. Pancho took another sip of champagne while she sorted that out in her mind. Humphreys went on. I live here whenever I'm at Cellini. The research staff uses the other end of the house. But they don't live here. He laughed. No, they live a few levels up in the more ordinary quarters. And you get the whole place rent-free. With a waggle of his free hand, Humphreys said, one of the advantages of wealth. The rich get richer, or they lose what they've got. Nodding, Pancho asked, so what do they research down here? Lunar ecology, Humphreys replied. They're trying to learn how to build Earth-like ecologies here on the moon, underground. Like the Grand Plaza up topside. Yes, but completely closed cycle, so you don't have to put in fresh supplies of water. That's what all the flowers and the trees are about. Right. They've been able to make a lovely garden, all right, but it's incredibly expensive. Very labor-intensive, with no birds or insects to pollinate the plants. The idiots running Cellini's environmental safety department won't let me bring any up here, as if they could get loose. They're so stupidly narrow-minded, they could look through a keyhole with both eyes. Pancho smiled at him, remembering how hard it had been for her to get the approval to bring Ellie and her food into Cellini. I must be smarter than he is, she thought. Or maybe Cellini's execs just don't like mega-gazillionaires trying to push him around. And those full-spectrum lamps cost a fortune in electricity, Humphreys went on. Electricity's cheap, though, isn't it? Humphreys took a long draught of his champagne, then answered. It's cheap once you've built the solar energy farm up on the surface, and the superconducting batteries to store electrical energy during the night. High capital costs, though. Yeah, but once you've got the equipment in place, the operating costs are pitiful low. Except for maintenance. Keeping the solar farms clean up on the surface, you mean? Yeah, I guess that ain't cheap. Any work on the surface is damned expensive, he grumbled, bringing his champagne flute to his lips. So how rich are you? She asked abruptly. Humphreys didn't sputter into his champagne, but he did seem to swallow pretty hard. Pancho added, I mean, do you own any of this, or are you just living in it? He thought for a moment before answering. Then, my grandfather made his fortune in the big dot-com boom around the turn of the century. Gramps was smart enough to get into the market while it was still rising and get out before the bubble burst. What's a dot-com? Pancho asked. Ignoring her question, Humphreys went on. My father took his degrees in biology and law. He bought into half a dozen biotech firms and built one of the biggest fortunes on Earth. What are your degrees in? I have an MBA from Wharton and a JD from Yale. So you're a lawyer. I've never practiced law. Pancho felt alarm signals tingling through her. That's not a straight answer, she realized. But then, what do you expect from a lawyer? She recalled the old dictum. How can you tell when a lawyer's lying? Watch his lips. What do you practice? She asked, trying to make it sound nonchalant. He smiled again, and there was even some warmth in it this time. Oh, making money, mostly. That seems to be what I'm best at. Glancing around the luxurious library, Pancho replied, I'd say you're pretty good at spending it, too. Humphreys laughed out loud. Yes, I suppose so. I spend a lot of it on women. As if on cue, a generously curved redhead in a slinky metallic sheath appeared at the doorway to the dining room, a slim aperitif glass dangling empty from one manicured hand. Say, Humpy, when is dinner served? She asked poutily. I'm starving. His face went white with anger. I told you, he said through clenched teeth, that I have a business meeting to attend to. I'll be with you when I'm finished here. But I'm starving, the redhead repeated. Glancing at Pancho, Humphreys said in a low voice, I'll be with you in a few minutes. The redhead looked Pancho over from head to toe, grinned, and flounced off. Visibly trying to contain his fury, Humphreys said, I'm sorry for the interruption. Pancho shrugged. So I'm not invited for dinner, she realized. Should have known. Is that your wife? She asked coolly. No. You are married, aren't you? Twice. Are you married now? Legally, yes. Our lawyers are working out a divorce settlement. Pancho looked straight into his icy gray eyes. The anger was still there, but he was controlling it now. He seemed deadly calm. Okay, she said. Let's finish up this business meeting so y'all can get down to dinner. Humphreys picked up his glass again, drained it, and placed it carefully back on the bar. Looking up at Pancho, he said, All right. I want to hire you. I already have a job, she said. As a pilot for Astro Manufacturing, I know. You've been working for them for more than 6 years. So? You won't have to quit Astro. In fact, I want you to stay with them. The task I have in mind for you requires that you keep your position with Astro. Pancho understood immediately. You want me to spy on them? That's putting it rather crudely, Humphrey said, his eyes shifting away from her and then back again. But yes, I need a certain amount of industrial espionage done, and you are ideally placed to do it. Pancho didn't think twice. How much money are we talking about here?
End of side two.
Cuenca. Dan Randolph felt a wave of giddiness wash over him as he stood at his hotel window and looked down into the rugged gorge of the Xucar River. This is stupid, he told himself. You've been in high-rises a lot taller than this. You've been on top of rocket launch towers. You've been to the Grand Canyon. You've done EVA work in orbit, for God's sake, floating hundreds of miles above the Earth without even an umbilical cord to hold on to. Yet he felt shaky, slightly lightheaded as he stood by the window. It's not the height, he told himself. For a scary moment, he thought it was one of the woozy symptoms of radiation sickness again. But then he realized that it was only because this hotel was hanging over the lip of the gorge, 6 stories down from the edge. The old city of Cuenca had been built in medieval times along the rim of the deep, vertiginous chasm. From the street, the hotel seemed to be a 1-story building, as did all the buildings along the narrow way. Inside, though, it went down and down, narrow stairways and long windows that looked out into the canyon cut by the river so far below. Turning from the window, Dan went to the bed and unzipped his travel bag. He was here in the heart of Spain to find the answer to the world's overwhelming problem, the key to unlock the wealth of the solar system. Like a knight on a quest, he told himself, with a sardonic shake of his head. Seeking the Holy Grail. Like a tired old man who's pushing himself because he doesn't have anything else left in his life, sneered a bitter voice in his head. The flight in from Madrid had turned his thoughts to old tales of knighthood and chivalrous quests. The clipper ship rocket flight from La Guaira had taken only 25 minutes to cross the Atlantic, but there was nothing to see. No portholes in the craft's stout body, and the video views flashing across the screen at his seat might as well have been from an astronomy lecture. The flight from Madrid to Cuenca, though, had been in an old-fashioned tilt-rotor, chugging and rattling and clattering across a landscape that was old when Hannibal had led armies through it. Don Quixote rode across those brown hills, Dan had told himself. El Cid battled the Moors here. He snorted disdainfully as he pulled his shaving kit from the travel bag. Now I'm going to see if we can win the fight against a giant bigger than any windmill that old Don Quixote tackled. The phone buzzed. Dan snapped his fingers, then realized that the hotel phone wasn't programmed for sound recognition. He leaned across the bed and stabbed at the on button. Mr. Randolph. The face Dan saw in the palm-sized phone screen looked almost Mephistophelian. Thick blood.